with a screening of Peter Miller's documentary Sacco and Vanzetti. The event takes place tomorrow, which is Saturday, beginning at 3 p.m. at the Casa Monte Casino in Boston's North End. The Sacco and Vanzetti Commemoration Society seeks to preserve the memory of Sacco and Vanzetti and to honor their efforts in trying to radically change the society they lived in. The committee stands against the death penalty, the persecution of political dissidents, and the persecution and scapegoating of immigrants. That is tomorrow, 3 p.m. at the Casa Monte Casino, located at 11 Tilliston Street in the north end of Boston, just off Hanover Street. All are welcome and admission is free.
And Groundwork, Somerville's Green Team, Somerville Climate Action, and the Somerville Hispanic Seventh-day Adventist Church are co-sponsoring a Living Green Festival this Sunday afternoon. The event will address environmental justice issues like air quality and health, high energy and food costs, and building community relationships. The event takes place this Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Somerville Hispanic Seventh-day Adventist Church, which is located at 59 Cross Street.
Centro Presente offers classes of Spanish for Social Change. Learn to speak, write, and understand Spanish within an alternative political and cultural context. Learn about Latin American culture and history and the Latino immigrant experience in the United States while learning basic, intermediate, and advanced Spanish. Students can get involved in solidarity activities through a variety of programs. A new cycle of classes will run from January 14th to March 12th. It takes place at Centro Presente, 17 Innerbelt Road in Somerville. For more information, please contact Jesse at 617-629-4731.
And this Sunday at 11 a.m., the Community Church of Boston Sunday Speakers Forum will mark World AIDS Day with Morgan Phillips speaking on the unspoken connection between incarceration and AIDS. Incarceration is one of the highest contributors to the rise of HIV/AIDS in black communities. The congregation will discuss the realities of AIDS, the benefits and negatives of a World AIDS Day, and what must be done to stop the increasing rates of HIV/AIDS in marginalized communities. The Sunday Forum is followed by community luncheon, and all are welcome. The Community Church of Boston is located at 565 Boylston Street in Copley Square. Visit www.communitychurchofboston.org or call 617-266-6710 for more information.
I think we're out of stuff.
That's right.
And indeed, we're also out of time, so that works out delightfully well. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WNBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Thank you for being part of What's Left. I'm Linda. I'll be back next week, as far as I know. Please stay tuned for Music for Human Beings coming up as soon as they land, planetarily speaking. You're listening to WMBR Cambridge.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran, and I'm here feeling your exponential energy, and it is rising. Here to discuss that with us and other things is Erno. Erno, welcome.
Hello, Doctor. It's once again a pleasure to be with you this weekend, and as you increase my energy.
Erno, you are energy.
Yes, I believe that is what the theory says.
Also with us is Aurora, vocal therapist. Aurora, welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show again, to share and to resonate the energies upon one another. It is a delight.
The delight and the energy, of course, is exponential. We also have with us Zoro, the numerologist. Zoro, welcome.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you to all the listeners whose energies resonate with ours today.
Ah, yes, we can feel them in the distance, almost in the peripheral. Of our other side, we can see those that tune in with us, those who share with us the common thoughts,
those that couple with us through the radio.
It's a pleasing bath of feeling.
I have always felt that out of our five physical senses, if we share a commonality in one of those senses, a common experience, then we can reach out among one another and feel our existences, even if we are not practiced in the other side. So those of us who listen and hear, as we listen here, we are sharing something together, and that is beauty.
Beauty in its purest form.
Quite profound.
Exponential beauty.
I am not too sure about beauty, but it seems to me that the exponential energy, it is light or sound. See, these sounds, they come together, and before long there is a lot of sound energy.
Reverberation, vibrations.
I feel the energy exponentiating in this music now.
It's a kind of convergence, I think, this coming together.
Here we hear both organized, beautiful harp, and indeed the sounds of chaotic animals, a convergence of order and chaos that is a metaphor for our lives.
That is such a delightful summary. So we can dwell now on the beauty of the harp. And why is it, do you think, that the sounds of the harp are so pure and so beautiful to us all, while we find the discordant, harsh braying of the mule to be unpleasant?
You know, I think one of the more interesting things about the harp is it is one of the instruments which has one string for each note that it will play. And each string will come with its own imperfections and the tuning and so forth. Whereas when you listen, for example, to a person's voice, or an animal, it is only one structure which is resonating.
Unlike the harp, what you are saying is that a human being can resonate many different ways in many different forms.
Yes, I think this is sort of linked to the variety of our intellect.
Well, there's definitely a continuity there with the human voice. And our own abilities allow us to hone in on what is pleasing and what is soothing in the voice. But if you look at some of our brothers, our non-human brethren, you'll find that their range, their dynamics, their overtones are much more structured, much more constant. And we find some of these noises natively to not be music. And it takes great study to appreciate the beauty in the music, in the braying of the mule or the quacking of the duck, or in the squawking of the horse. Perhaps all of this ties back to energy. For all our matter, all of the sounds that we make, everything that comes off us is energy.
It is interesting, though. It seems that the noises of the animals are quite varied and infinitely different. But the harp, it makes only these discrete notes, and so it is jumping around and playing so many strings just to try and catch up with the variety of life.
Yes, but perhaps that is the answer. That is what we are looking for. Taking simple and forming it into a complex whole.
And so the pure building blocks, when arranged together, can mimic some of the sounds that evoke some of the feelings through years of evolution, through communion with the animals. And we can see, we can understand perhaps, the different sounds and the different feelings evoked by chords, by instruments, which by themselves are so pure and so simple. Much as the kitten echoes the sounds of the mewling child.
Perhaps it is instead the child that echoes the animal. For are we any different, I wonder? We resonate in more ways, but does quantity actually make us different from the animals? Quantity of energy, that is.
That leads to some important and interesting ideas. Now, Dr. Jalas, as a transdermal mediator, have you studied well the skins on the inside of the throat?
The internal inside skin.
Yes.
Yeah, it is of course a topic which a transdermal mediator is nothing if he has not studied it at least slightly. And in particular, I did graduate work on the nodules that can grow on internal structures due to snoring and other smoking-related illnesses, such as throat nodules. And of course, the issue you bring up is an excellent one, but I think actually the voice is more like a harmonica.
Interesting. And in what sense? Through the blowing, sort of air-rushing motion?
Well, if you have ever studied closely the chromatic harmonica, you will notice that
There are, for every note, there are two holes, and they are in pitch, they differ slightly. And this results in the perception of so-called beats, which I find offensive to the ear. I think most people, they are offended by these beat frequencies when they appear.
I wonder if, in this analogy of human voice to harmonica, does this mean the simpler sounds and utterings of the animals are really more like a simpler instrument, like a kazoo, for instance?
I definitely think that there is some similarity there. I think it may be that it is a good moment to take a call. If anyone would like to join in and call, join our discussion, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
How are you?
Caller, we are well.
I am well, too.
Caller.
I'm about to fly.
You are about to fly in the figurative sense.
In the physical sense.
You are about to embark on an air journey.
I am.
Well, I think this is wonderful and.
Now, caller, I sense in your voice, and please excuse me if this is too personal, but I sense that you have undergone some tribulations today.
I have had a very interesting day, I will not lie. You are very, very good at something what's going on, Aurora.
So, caller, would you care to tell us about it? Our discussion up to this point has been on the on how energies multiply when they are left alone in a room together in a reproductive way. We call it the exponential energy theory. The idea here is that photonic and platonic energies will mix, creating a new quasi-energetic source. Does this meet with your experience today? Were you a jumble of energy or a jumble of butterflies or entropy?
I think inside it was a jumble of energy, and when I spoke, I was a whole lot of entropy.
You know, I have a simpler version, I think, of this question, which may be easier to interpret. If today were to be a piece of music, a song, or perhaps a symphony, perhaps simply a song, what instrument would take the leading part?
In my song?
Yes.
I think today it would be the drum.
The drum.
Yep. There's a lot of, I think the drums of the heartbeat were the song of today.
So your day, so caller, is full of primal influence.
I'm on a plane. Unfortunately, I have to leave.
Safe journeys.
Thank you, caller. And
thank you for having me on the show. I apologize to cut it off so abruptly.
Of course, the necessities of the rigors of air travel requires this. Thank you, caller.
Yes. Thank you for sharing your drum beat with us.
Yes, my pleasure.
Nice, Anna. And always lovely to hear from someone about to enjoy this experience, which I find very discomforting.
I believe that if we can reach out to the listeners to tell us what instrument played the main role in their day, that perhaps we can together create a symphony. For me, it was the flute. Sort of melodic, uplifting. Not as high-pitched as the piccolo, but it required great breath and effort.
I think for me, I am quite resonant with these string instruments, perhaps a violin or a viola.
Okay.
Something of this sort.
For me, I would have to say my day mostly resembles the woodblock. Very simple, very ordered.
Yeah, as for myself, I think that it takes some reflection on me. I think if people are familiar with the wind chime, that many of my days proceed like that, silent for a long time, and then occasionally a bring bring, and there is a sound, and it's not really music, but
I find it beautiful, though.
Very pleasant
and mysterious.
Let's go to our listeners here in the bar, and we'll ask them what they think. And is it? Well, excuse me. I think largely I'm being ignored. So, if anyone would like to call in, the number is 617-253-8810. We have two lines available, both of which are empty.
You know, I like this picture of the wind chime. The wind chime is quite a cool instrument because it will play the same tones over and over, but it will simply be another permutation of these notes that you will hear.
I believe the wind chime gives us insight into how you live your life, Doctor. Very, very calm, very controlled, yet very driven by nature.
And very impulsive as well.
Go where the wind takes you, if you will.
I can see it, yes, on the lines of your face.
There are many lines. I think partly, have you ever enjoyed listening to, from the comfort of some secure shelter, a hurricane as voiced by a wind chime? Because there is no finer exponent of the disastrous power that nature possesses than to listen to the hurricane squeal.
Well, I must admit that the closest I have come to this experience was within a tornado. But unfortunately, after an initial clashing chime of every single chime within the wind chime, it was carried away.
Perhaps this is representative of the inner chaos.
But the thing that storms have taught me about chaos, once I was at a potionology conference out in East Asia, and I had the unfortunate luck to be trapped in a monsoon, and we moved the conference up into the high altitudes of the Himalayas, and we realized that there, the chaotic monsoon turned into a peaceful snowfall. So perhaps the real challenge is to find the order in the chaos.
Indeed. I think, to me, this image of the departing wind chime is a moving one, Aurora. I often have come to the conclusion that that one must learn to rely on oneself, that if one is able to embrace oneself psychologically, spiritually, that many, many situations which are otherwise trying can be handled, I think, easily and with grace.
One must proceed with caution with this ideology, for we cannot, to make a physical example, undergo photosynthesis. We rely on our environment, on those around us for sustenance.
Yes, we must pull order out of a chaotic environment, like the wind chime pulls music out of the chaos of the wind.
Yes, I like this image. I think that a good philosophy to have is to attempt to resonate with your environment, but not to be carried away entirely by it, so that you may have your own goals and your own desires, but that you still have a harmony and a resonance with the things around you which you may not be able to control.
A few nights ago, I enjoyed looking out upon the sky and seeing a very thin crescent, the moon, and a few stars. I realized how rare it was to see these things with my physical eye in the city. I'm curious how, as spiritual beings, you, all of you, cope.
Well, in the city, you must fight to survive.
I must say that personally, this weighs heavily on me as well. I quite miss to see the stars, and I look for every opportunity to see past the light pollution which we have here in Boston and Cambridge.
I saw a group of children in an electronics store recently, whereas this is a place that I like to go to enjoy meditation on materialism. And I saw a group of children, they were playing a game in which the objective was to collect stars. I wondered if it is symbolic. It's the street child who is unable to even see the stars at night, and of course can barely see the large star in the day, that they would retreat into their cyclops to discover the stars.
It would indeed seem such a precious, such a rare thing, a star, that to collect them perhaps allows them to reminisce, allows them to fight.
Mm.
It's interesting, though. I see that this game we have, it is reflective of the Western desire to own and to claim possession of these things. The humankind has not reached the stars at this point, and it is very difficult to see if we shall ever. But yet we play these games where we will sort them and say, this star is yours and this star is yours, and so on.
Are not the squirrels the hoarders of Mother Nature? Then can it not be true that we like to collect things not because it is Western, but because we are squirrels inside?
I think that these are both two valid interpretations. Yes, I can see the squirrel point of view.
I'm not sure the narrative in the Cyclops, but I think that I wonder if it was a more benign narrative than simply the act of hoarding, of now these stars are my possessions, and I will keep them here in my sinus and my pocket, in my in the inside of my elbow and in other places, so that others may not enjoy the shining brightness there.
So you think that this is a story about selfishness?
Well, I'm not sure. I wonder if any of you or any of our listeners are familiar with any pastimes that involve hoarding stars.
Well, certainly astronomy is to hoard stars and planets and galaxies in one's mind.
Well, I think actually my point of view on this this pastime and this occupation is that astronomers are not attempting to hoard, but to be curators, as if to say the world needs a museum for these observations, and we shall make it.
Do we not know whether or not this game, the hoarding of the stars, is to perhaps share with those in the city all the stars that can be seen from the dimness of the prairie?
I wonder what my fellow hosts think about the whole concept of hoarding. If we do, is it a good thing? Should we do it? Should we remove it from our system? Is it bad? Is it... It's something that is without a doubt human or squirrel in the sense, but should it be there?
Let's ask one of our listeners. The number, if anyone would like to join, is 617-253-8810. Caller, welcome.
Hello. I was listening to what you were saying just earlier, and I couldn't help but think that, that perhaps both points of view are right about squirrels and Western materialist culture, because squirrels, after all, are Western.
The squirrel is a Western animal.
Yes, it makes sense that it should be covetous living in a materialist culture.
That is an excellent point, caller.
Perhaps so. I am wondering, did we raise the squirrels to be as they are in our culture, or did the squirrels influence our culture so much?
And as a transdermal mediator, this poses the question to me, what is the economic effect of the squirrels?
The squirrels, perhaps it's the deleterious effect of the urban environment, because so many squirrels live in urban environments today. Perhaps woodland squirrels are not so hoarding.
Huh. This is quite insightful.
Well, in my youth, I lived in the Midwest, in the upper Midwest region, and I found that many of the woodland squirrels did indeed hoard, and I knew this because I would eat them and then find their homes full of acorns.
You would, after consuming the animal, you would find its nest and you would scoop out the remains.
Well, I did not wish for their good hard work to go to waste.
I wonder, are there not animals in the East that hoard? There must. There are still winters. Obviously, the panda doesn't hoard. It searches out bamboo, but there must be some animal.
Well, in my mind, as a Mid-Easterner, I think of the date palm, which behaves in many ways like an animal. It moves in the wind, gently swaying. And it collects the water and the air in the fruit.
I see, it is a combination of the active and the passive.
Indeed. Why don't we take another caller and begin hoarding them? The number again is 617-253-8810. Caller, welcome.
Hello.
Yes, marhaba, caller.
Good evening. So, I was thrilled to hear your conversation about squirrels and hoarding. A shiver went down my spine, because when I recently was driving across the country to Colorado, they have ground squirrels. Okay. And I just wanted to know, I have a two-part question. What do you think it means that the squirrels in Colorado are not just in the trees, but also under the ground? They're subterranean. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of the question is that there are humans in Colorado who hoard the ground squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
They have vacuum machines that pull them out of the earth.
Well, caller, I believe I can answer the first part of this question. It is little known, and this is something I discovered in my meditations in the forests, but there is a small tribe, a small seclusion of squirrel society, which, much as our monks turn away from the pleasures of the flesh, they turn away from the pleasures of the trees and of the sky, and they become the chipmunk.
Oh, I see.
I wonder if we could investigate their dogma, what it would say to us. It must be quite insightful.
Can you tell us a little more about the behavior of the Mediterranean squirrel, caller?
The Mediterranean squirrel?
I believe he means subterranean.
The subterranean.
Oh, subterranean. They are large and pudgy, and they squeak when you run after them.
Like many people I know. Why don't we bring another caller on the air? Again, if anyone would like to join, the number is 617-253-8810, and caller, please stay with us.
Mm-hmm.
Caller 3, marhaban.
Ship, monk.
Yes.
Ship, monk.
Yes, caller. It is a strange. I think the word is portmanteau.
Monks? What kind of monks?
Well, there is.
Ship.
It makes me think of Chip and Dale, and then my mind moves to Chippendales, and I'm only seeing leather pants.
So I'm not really familiar with these things. I recall the lower apes, the monkey. I always thought, as I was learning English, that it was a strange name for the aesthetic monk to be related to the monkey.
Well, but
the
you see,
funky monkey. But what about the felonious monkey?
And well, it's all related, also, I think, because the monk he resides in a monkery, as the nun resides in the nunnery.
Monkery, monkery, do. But most importantly, and that is why I saved this point for last, the lighting engineer at Woodstock was named Chip Monk.
It is
Woodstock,
delightful.
Woodstock, Chip Monk. It all forms a pattern, if you see what I mean. Ehrlichman, Halderman, Mitchell, and Dean.
Yes, I believe I'm following, caller. The only point I'm confused on is your, it seems, a related issue on hoarding leather pants in your mind.
The other caller.
I'm sorry.
This caller is delighting in the,
I
in
think
the
that's
sounds
a rolled up
and
sock.
In the meanings of all of these words.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this speech in poetry, if I may call it poetry.
It's gorgeous.
And the other caller too.
Yeah.
So how is it the leather pants? I'm sorry, I was not really aware. The relation of the leather
to the ground squirrel.
To the squirrel.
I believe it's an ancient formula. We went from hoarding to squirrel to ground squirrel.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And then from ground squirrel, we tunneled into the earth, and then there's this transcendent moment when the chipmunk was brought to our awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two chipmunks, of which I'm particularly fond. Their names are Chip and Dale.
I see. And then this of course, is...
Leather pants suddenly popped into my mind. I think it had to do with...
A popular association.
They were worn by a male.
Let's bring another voice in to share this with us. Again, the number for anyone that would like to call is 617-253-8810. Caller 4, marhaban.
Mahanaka, hello.
Welcome to you, caller. And caller, what instrument is playing the music of your life today?
For me, it would have to be the lyre.
The lyre, of course, a beautiful and very classical instrument.
And the lyre is very deceptive.
It's true, because it sounds a lot like a guitar.
Or a lute.
Or the traditional Irish instrument, the bouzouki.
Or the oud, which I like.
Now, what would be interesting is to think about when we take leather pants.
Mm-hmm.
And we hold them up to the wind. It has to be a very strong wind, because leather pants can be very heavy. But if it's a very strong wind, we hold them up to the wind.
They would resonate.
And then it would resonate. It would resonate if we were holding it just the right way.
Much like the wind chimes drawing sound forth.
Yes, perhaps this is the hurricane that we could take advantage of.
I think this is the instrument that is symbolizes the lead in my band.
Perhaps you could take the leather pants and stretch them over some form and make a drum out of them.
Yeah, I would
consider that to be a little too humdrum, and I think I'd prefer the wind chime or the resonant sound of a didgeridoo or dome.
Well, it's very interesting because, as it turns out, you can make musical instruments out of just about anything. Even the slapping motion of leather pants as you wring them out.
Correct. Now, have you guys ever washed leather pants before? Anyone?
I have not, Carl.
I have...
All of my leather pants are dirty.
Now, there was a period of time in which I wore one pair of leather pants, and they are impossible to clean.
Well, let me just interrupt to say that all of us constantly wear leather pants.
They're not dry.
They can be dry. They can be wet in the rain, perhaps. Covered in hair.
So, caller, were you asking if any of us had ever worn human leather pants? Because I think, according to Aurora, the answer would be we are all constantly wearing our own leather. And my answer would be, if you were wearing someone else's leather, that's how I would interpret that particular question, the answer is usually not.
Aurora, are your leather pants that you're referring to, are you referring to our physical skin or the leather pants that we all wear on our soul?
Symbolically.
Symbolically, to protect us from the world while...
And to cause our symbolic sweat to accumulate.
The inner funds.
Our soul pants, if you will.
Our soul pants.
Exactly, and usually most of the things that come out of my mouth have multiple meanings.
So I can only think of one particular connotation of meaning from that last utterance, but perhaps there are several entendres of interpretation from that last statement.
Well, I think what Aurora is saying here, if I may be so bold, is that if the discussion about what she had said were a horse, we would be making leather out of it.
I understand.
Well, also, that the things that come out of my mouth in a figurative sense or in the literal sense, such as vomit, it is usually very mean.
My interpretation is this. Perhaps if her utterances are a horse, they may also at the same time be a horse of another color.
If her utterances were a horse, then they'd be neighs and whinnies. I'm not following, Zora. I'm sorry.
I feel I'm stuck in a logical trap because you said that the things that come from your mouth have multiple meanings, but the only possible other meaning that statement could have would be that your statements only have one meaning.
Well, that would depend. I mean, I think that the statements having multiple meanings, you could be talking about the meanings themselves versus the statements. And are the statements, do the statements have, in other words, it implies it possesses that the statements have multiple meanings, where I would see that the statements wouldn't necessarily be tied to the meanings, that they could be mutually exclusive.
Yes, I think that what you are saying is that the multiple meanings need not be opposite, but they could be, in fact, tangential and completely unrelated.
Well, and then there's the actual sound of her voice itself, which has its own meaning.
Indeed.
Is intonation involved in when the intonation is changed, and that would indicate something else.
So one of our listeners sent in an audiophile, and I think he also is an audiophile, that he would like us to air. So let's take a moment and meditate on this. He says that he recorded it recently, and it was in the wilderness. So let's listen in for just a moment, everyone.
That's beautiful. focus on. Is that, it's reminiscent, is there, it feels there's a leather instrument involved.
I'm not sure there is any leather there, but let's
You know, I could be swayed to side with that point of view.
I wonder, it sounds more to me like there's a fire burning, a passion in that recording, and I wonder, I don't see what that has to do with leather. I don't hear any leather.
Well, much as fire can protect us from the wilderness and from the coldness, so does our soul leather protect our souls from being observed.
Yeah, if I weren't feeling so raw, I'd want to hide away right now.
And,
much like a ground squirrel.
Caller 2, tell us, did you hear any music today? Did you feel any feelings?
They're hard to recall at the moment.
Is that Caller 2 or Caller also?
Both Caller 2 and Caller 2. I mean, I think it's a complicated issue.
In terms of which caller?
I actually had a two-part question. And maybe now would be a good time. I hear that the twos have come forth. So the second part of my question involved the practice of vacuuming ground squirrels from the ground.
As a means of
collecting them, hoarding them in
of hunting. Is it for the purpose of consuming or simply disposing of the ground squirrel? So I'd like to perhaps make an analogy. Is it more like hunting a deer, or is it like vacuuming a rug?
So, yeah, you know, my sense is that it would be kind of like, you know, the mortar and pestle connotation of ground squirrels. The squirrels have been ground with the mortar and pestle.
This seems to me to be some sort of unnecessary cruelty. We must remember that all of the creatures in the world are the same as ourselves.
So I am a little bit unclear. What exactly is the question concerning the vacuum?
Perhaps
I thought that it resembled to me a hoarding of hoarders.
Oh, I see. And this self-similarity.
When you mentioned that squirrels, that we all had a squirrel within each of us, I then thought about the squirrels I had seen in my travels, and then I thought of the great ground squirrel collection box into which they were vacuumed in Colorado, off the plains, and it occurred to me that if we have a squirrel within each of us, there are squirrels within that squirrel.
So I have spoken occasionally with the native Coloradan, and I believe that they regard these ground squirrels as a form of a pest because of their hoarding nature. They want to grow wheat or something like this, but the squirrels are preventing it. So I do not believe that they are hoarding the hoarders, but actually attempting to dispel the hoarding.
It's more like vacuuming it.
So what you are saying to me that I am hearing is that we hoard in order to destroy.
In this particular instance, yes.
Well, generally, I think hoarding is collection for the purpose of control. So I think, for example, walking around and seeing every beach or a list of statues and simply seeing, absorbing them, being in their presence, this is not an act of hoarding because there is no element of control there. Why don't we bring another voice on the air to join in on the discussion? If anyone would like to join in, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, welcome.
Marhaban, caller.
Yes, I'm familiar with the operation of this process. I've seen the squirrel harvesting go on. Really tremendous number of ground squirrels are harvested. It's something of a mess. Some call it a slaughter. And by the way, MIT, I think someone would have corrected that pronunciation. The word is pestle.
The word is pestle?
Instead of pestle.
Instead of pest.
Savvy.
The plural of pest is pestle? Caller?
The plural of varmint is vermin. And the plural of peso is pestilence. But back to the subject of the Midwestern ground squirrel extraction.
Caller,
which is...
Caller, yep. I'm sorry, but it seems that you must be a language expert, and there is a question I've been wanting the answer to for a long time.
No,
about
not
English.
At all, although I have been accused of being quite a cunning linguist, yes.
Well, so the question is this. In the phrase topsy-turvy, what exactly is meant by turvy?
I don't know that. I know about ground squirrel extraction technology.
Well, then proceed, please.
The Rocky Mountain high altitude technologies were based not upon the technologies which you had posited earlier in the program, but upon basic existing off-the-shelf mole whacking technologies of the time, compensated for the Rocky Mountain high altitude barometrically adjusted lifestyle.
So it was a matter of adapting to the higher altitude and hence lower, thinner air, which had less oxygen and more carbon dioxide.
And you are precisely on correct with that, sir. So the... excuse me. Like the air conditioners that the United States so wisely sends to the middle of the desert to air condition a tent, you can see the technical challenge is that with less air, one needs to develop a more powerful rodent extraction force.
Yes, I believe in this particular instance in Colorado, they will have a device. It is called, I am unfamiliar with the origins of the name, but it is called a swamp cooler. They do not use the same kind of system to refrigerate their home. They evaporate water.
Evaporative cooling, yes, you are correct, sir. Invented by Nikola Tesla, but bankrolled, oddly enough, by Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
I did not know this fact about it, but it is...
I did not know that.
It is quite interesting, because I believe that Nikola Tesla did reside in Colorado at some point.
Hi-oh. And Groucho was quite a fan of visiting the small town of Victor, just outside of Cripple Creek.
This is a gambling place, I believe?
You just said the secret. Wait! George, tell him what he's won.
Well, I think I'm not alone among the hosts in being confused. But caller, so you are saying that there were special extraction techniques meant to eradicate the subterranean...
Oh, the humanity!
And apparently these techniques were inhumane.
Or unsuccessful.
Perhaps they were both.
Both successful and inhumane?
Unsuccessful and inhumane.
They were humane, but successful.
I believe it is the same, actually.
I think I finally understand what we're...
Can you take one deep breath, slowly in and then out. Slowly, gently... Color, be gentle with your breath. Allow it to come in and out of you. Well done.
Caller, are you still with us?
breathing.
Caller.
No, I'm perfectly all right, but I must go now to feed my pet mollusk.
Excellent call. Well, thank you so much for calling and for listening and for joining in and for being with us.
It's always so good to be a part of the family.
It is good also to have you as a part of the family.
I think I finally understand the situation with the squirrels, Doctor and fellow hosts. What we are doing is not hoarding ground squirrels. We are hoarding our own pleasure, our own satisfaction by removing the squirrels and taking control of the ground. So really, it's like we want to keep the passion and the pleasure burning in our souls.
Or perhaps we are hoarding the ground.
It's all a matter of control.
I believe this situation, it is a bit of a knot in the fabric of reality, and that over the course of time, humans are attempting to unknot it.
Well, unfortunately, we are not able to continue. But caller, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks also to Erno.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Doctor. If I could hoard this radio station every night, I would. But unfortunately, I can't.
And we would so love to hoard you. And thanks also to Aurora.
Namaste.
And to Zoro.
Thank you. And thank you to all the listeners. And I am very, very sorry for those for which we may not get to.
Thanks, as always, to everyone who called in. And thanks to everyone for listening. This is Dr. Jalis Sakran on Music for Human, which is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned next for Radio Ninja on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Ma'asalama.
Safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Save the human race. A creature with a dream. To entertain the children of